It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Second and six, Williams makes a cut. To the end zone for the touchdown. No flags. And they have done it. Chiefs are Super Bowl champions here in Miami as they win it here in Super Bowl 54.
All right, if you were watching the Super Bowl last night, that's what you saw. I have to confess, I was really happy the Kansas City Chiefs won, and no, I didn't get to watch it. No, I didn't. I have to go to bed early, but I bet lots of you watched it and enjoyed at least parts of it, with a victory of 31-20, and also kind of an exciting place where the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, But the point is, in the last 6 minutes, you know, he made two touchdowns, and that was he threw a ball that resulted in two touchdowns, and so it was kind of an exciting game. That much I do know. I have to say it was really a relief. I'm surely you must have all felt that way, that it was a relief from all of the headlines, the news that's just been so dreadful. It was steady drip, and it was nice to see Americans gather in Miami and kind of be happy and having fun. We don't see that very often. But that does not take away from the serious aberrations in the Super Bowl halftime and other things like the commercial. You know, 1 Million Moms, our organization, a subgroup of American Family Association, 1 Million Moms, started a petition that got thousands of people involved protesting this drag queen ad for Sabra Hummus. And, of course, they did not prevail. I mean, the NFL just ignored them. And we know why, because when you see the halftime show, you could see that whoever's making the decisions has no sense of moral high ground. None. The halftime show, I don't care how talented those girls, and they are. I did watch those, by the way, just so you know. I watched clips later. But I just, as a musician and former musician and performer, I just am appalled. And now the grandmother of two little girls who love to dance, I just am, it's like a kick in the stomach to see women who are so talented feel that they must degrade themselves on a stage by exposing their bodies and doing, you know, vulgar. I mean, how many vulgar gyrations can you do? Isn't it kind of more interesting to come up with interesting dance steps instead of, you know, what they do? Isn't that like the last resort? Isn't it like comedians telling dirty jokes when they're not really funny? That's really what it reminds me of. And that's degrading. It's just degrading to the whole country. And that's what goes out all over the world. That's why one of the reasons the Islamic countries call us the Great Satan, because that's what they see. That's what they see. I think it's degrading. I object. Meanwhile, there was this beautiful pro-life commercial, speaking of the commercials, that they did not play. It was called Faces of Choice. And it talks that each person talks about how they're adult persons for the most part, and how they were almost aborted. Each of them, it's a story, a true story. It's not made up. They're not actors. And it was very powerful. But the powers that be at the NFL would not take their commercial. So those are the behind-the-scenes stories. And so we take the good with the bad. We see Americans finally having fun, some great, wholesome people, still enjoying that event, even though there are some very unwholesome, sick people who are in charge of commercials and halftimes. So I don't know how that's all going to play out, except that's what happened last night. Well, meanwhile, last week, of course, the impeachment hearings went into the night. The senators have been, you know, the question for them first was whether they should call witnesses. And in a very close vote, I think it was 51-49, Mitt Romney and Susan Collins were the only Republicans who voted for witnesses. And, of course, they had John Bolton in mind. But that went down. And so the next thing is that today they will be doing closing arguments. There'll be 4 hours of debate, but they're not taking the vote till Wednesday. Don't ask me to explain that because I can't. The president gives his State of the Union address Tuesday night. Why they didn't go ahead and have them vote, I'll never know. Except that perhaps, you know, as a sort of a collegiality to Democratic senators running in the Iowa caucuses, which will be tonight, letting them go back, you know, to get in their, you know, their final a word with the voters of Iowa. But, you know, disregarding the president's position of giving a State of the Union address before the vote takes place. I'm not crazy about that. Not happy about it at all, but that's the way it turned out. I am happy about the vote not to call witnesses because I don't trust what would happen in the Senate if they unleashed those witnesses. I think it would turn into a circus. I know that's what they want because that's the only way that the left can win. Meanwhile, after the vote was taken on whether to take witnesses or not, this is a really interesting exchange on CNN. It was Wolf Blitzer asking Jeffrey Toobin what he thought just happened. Let's listen.
Toobin, step back a little bit. Give us the big picture right now of what we're seeing.
Trump won. I mean, you know, he's going to win this trial. He won on the issue of witnesses. He's going to get acquitted. And that's how history will remember what went on here.
All right. So that's what Jeffrey Toobin says. And he's right about that, except, of course, the left is not going to let this go. Like a dog with a bone, they will extract as much blood from the president as they can in his remaining term. And also then, assuming he's reelected, this is not going to stop. And just to give you a taste of that, here's a montage of some politicians and media types on the left and their response to what just took place. Clip 11.
If my Republican colleagues refuse to consider witnesses and documents in this trial, the president's acquittal will be meaningless.
Well, he will not be acquitted. You cannot be acquitted if you don't have a trial. And you don't have a trial if you don't have witnesses.
So we're going to have a trial with no witnesses. And I think Speaker Pelosi is right. Then this can't be a real acquittal.
They cannot walk out of this building and allege and assert that there has been a true acquittal. There will be no true acquittal if there is not a fair trial.
In fact, this trial is no vindication because it was really no trial, no witnesses.
But if we acquit this president in a sham trial with no witnesses, it sets a precedent. You can abuse your office and Congress will simply look the other way.
It will be illegitimate. It will have been a rush to judgment. In fact, it's a rush to a cover-up.
There will be a permanent asterisk next to the acquittal of President Trump written in permanent ink.
And Russia, if you're listening, 2020 is open for investigations.
He will be more likely to try to steal the 2020 election.
Elections may not have a fair result. The very charge goes to the fairness of our elections.
People around the world are watching us going, this is what you want for the rest of the world? I mean, what a sad, sad moment. After, you know, 300 plus years of democracy.
I think it's a sad day for the so-called Republican Party. You know, they're going to need to find their souls. Good luck to that.
He's saying, essentially, let's just say this was a court case. Yeah, he beat his wife. So?
This is going to be an enormous stain on the United States Senate.
And I fear very much that the president will see himself as one who can emulate that kind of monarchical power.
It's actually quite scary. I think we're at a very scary moment.
I think you just spoke for metric tons of our viewers watching tonight.
Yeah, so they're not going to let it go. But here's the thing. Please remember when they repeat these talking points, which they're trying to, you know, embed in the minds of Americans, there were, in fact, 17 witnesses. What happened in the House was the House is supposed to make the case, bring in the witnesses, and then bring that evidence, that written evidence. What were all those videos they played during the House managers? They played videos of the hearings that they conducted with witnesses. Those were their witnesses. They could have called John Bolton. They could have called anyone they liked, but they did not because they wanted to get it done by Christmas. It's as simple as that. And, of course, there is no a crime. The president did nothing wrong. We have the transcript. We heard what he said. And so there was no crime, and that's why the thing fell apart. But they want you to believe there was no witnesses and no trial. But, of course, I think the Republicans went way beyond what they should have. This was a sham from the beginning, and they treated Adam Schiff and the managers as though they had credible evidence and credible things to say, and they stood up there and lied, made up things, just like Adam Schiff, you know, did a riff on President Trump's call to the Ukrainian president. He did that in the House. He totally made up a transcript that did not comport with what was transcribed from the actual call. So it's been ridiculous, and I guess it ended kind of ridiculously, which is kind of funny. I guess we should sort of enjoy the humor here. But at the end of the night, when it was time for closing statements, with John Roberts presiding, he called for closing statements. But what happened was Adam Schiff was, you know, like two seats down over from the podium, and then Gerald Nadler, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the House, this little short, very, very heavy man, jumps up and runs to the podium, and you can hear Adam Schiff calling out to him, "Jerry, Jerry, Jerry." And so Adam Schiff got upstaged, and Jerry Nadler did the closing statement. You should hear it. You should just hear it. This is clip 7.
Could you please respond to the answer just given by the President's counsel and provide any other comments the Senate would benefit from hearing before we adjourn for the evening?
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the Senate, we've just heard from the House, from the President's counsel, is the usual nonsense.
And so, could you hear that? Jerry, Jerry, Jerry. And so Gerald Nadler stands up and he does the closing arguments against his complaints and protestations. And you can see pictures of people on both sides, well, especially the Republicans, laughing. It really was kind of a funny moment, and that was the closing of the hearing. But it's not funny, and the whole thing is not funny, but that was a funny moment. There was another moment where Ted Cruz was seen on the floor. He was talking. He probably did not know he was on camera, but he was talking to two other senators, and he's mocking Nancy Pelosi's imitation clap. Remember at the State of the Union address last year, President Trump stood up to speak, and she gave this really demeaning, like mocking clap. She extended her arms and clapped, and she was sort of making fun of him. Well, Ted Cruz mocked her on the Senate floor in his conversation with these other senators that was caught on camera doing that, and it was really, really very funny. So the State of the Union takes place on Tuesday night, and Nancy Pelosi did not prevail in this impeachment, and it'll be interesting to watch her face as she stands behind him. Now, one of the other dramas that played out, which I wanted to spend time on, I'm just going to mention this before we have to take our break. This was stunning. Chief Justice Roberts would not say anything, would not let any questions be asked about the whistleblower, about anything about him, any question even approaching that. When he opened the question and answer period on Friday, it's his job. He takes the questions and he says, this is from Senator so-and-so. He turns it over and reads the question. But on this one, he looked at the person's name, and it was Senator Rand Paul. He turned it over, and he stopped and read the question silently. And then he said, the chair has chosen not to read this question, and he lays it down to the side and goes on. Well, Rand Paul was furious because his question was about the whistleblower. He didn't mention whistleblower. He just said, why are Eric Chiaramella and Sean I'm forgetting his name in this moment, but there are two people who've been serving on the National Security Council together, along with Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, overheard plotting to destroy the president long before this incident ever happened. And then, of course, Rand Paul was not able to ask that question. Later, the Chief Justice was actually rebuked by the Senate, not publicly, but he was told that he didn't have the right to censor their questions. So Ron Johnson circled around and he asked a question. And then Adam Schiff gets up and says, oh, you know, we can't talk about the whistleblower. I will never say anything. And my staff is under threat. And the other person that's close to Eric Chiaramella was assigned to Schiff's committee the day after the phone call with the president and the president of Ukraine. Very strange, unseemly. And the Chief Justice was trying to stop that discussion. We'll come back to that. But we're going to go to Britain now. So stay tuned. Sadie Rios in the morning.
Here's Dan Steiner, president of Preborn, a ministry dedicated to helping save preborn babies from abortion through ultrasound.
I sense God's broken heart over the issue of abortion. You see, he sees every little baby that's being formed in the mother's womb, and it breaks his heart to see when the lifetime that he has planned for them is taken from them violently so often.
Preborn is the direct competition to Planned Parenthood. By letting a mother see her baby on ultrasound and hear her baby's heartbeat, she'll choose life 80% of the time. For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies whose lives were spared. To donate, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for General David Berger, Commandant of the United States Marine Corps. General Berger advises the President and National Security Council, while also serving as a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Psalm 78:72 reminds us of the importance of strong leadership. With upright heart, he shepherded them and guided them with his skillful hand. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Dear Heavenly Father, we ask for guidance for General Berger as he leads the men and women of the United States Marine Corps. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. Life is really about second chances. Barry Washington of Louisville, Kentucky knows all about that. He's a local pastor, and he also owns Barry's Cheesesteaks. But years ago, back in Philadelphia, Barry was on a very different path. He was a drug dealer, homeless, until a Good Samaritan came along. The stranger offered Barry prayer and kindness and $2 for a meal. It turned out to be a life-changing encounter. And now Barry is passing it forward, extending a helping hand to his workers, many of whom were once down on their luck looking for a second chance, like the Cathy brothers, 15-year-old Sean, 16-year-old Rodney, and 13-year-old DJ, caught throwing bottles at cars. Instead of calling the police, Barry gave the boys a job. A second chance. Barry is a Christian man, and he runs his business accordingly, sharing good food and lots of love with the neighborhood. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The UK becoming the first country ever to leave the European Union. And Brexit supporters here are cheering.
This is the people's vote, so yeah, they've listened to our voice.
They try to stop us time and time again.
But we wouldn't give up.
We weren't going to give up.
There at a rally outside Parliament, Prime Minister Boris Johnson, though, acknowledging that others feel, in his words, a sense of anxiety and loss. Britain out of the EU, but the UK split on whether that's a good thing. In London, Simon Owen, Fox News.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. While we were talking about impeachment and the Super Bowl and the Iowa caucuses, the State of the Union address, and let me think, there might be a few other things. Great Britain has been going through this major, major Titanic shift. It happened Friday night at midnight, UK time, and they are officially no longer part of the European Union. And we all know that it's been such a battle to get them out of there. So Katie Hopkins has joined us this morning. Katie is a writer. She's also a media personality. She had her own television show. She wrote for the Sun, the Daily Mail. Katie has tons of courage of her convictions, and she gets in trouble for that. I guess that's why I like her. And she's joining us this morning from her afternoon, our morning. Katie, good morning. Afternoon, something.
Good morning to you, and yes, good morning from a Britain that has formally left the European Union after, what is it, 3.5 long years of waiting to do so.
I saw, was there any celebration, or did it just pass quietly?
No, look, there was a celebration, and I went along, and it was held in Parliament Square in the heart of London under the shadow of Big Ben, which is currently encased in scaffolding, so we didn't get the bombs of Big Ben as we left the European Union. We officially left at 11 p.m. in the evening, so I would say a good 1,000 or so sturdy souls gathered in Parliament Square. There was a large stage there and a screen, and members of the Brexit Party, including Nigel Farage, spoke. I would say, honestly reporting, that there was a sense of celebration. We all turned up wanting to feel like, I don't know, we wanted to feel some kind of victory or elation, or at least have a moment of gloating. But actually, overall, there was a different feeling in the air. It's a nuanced thing, but certainly a recognition that whilst we may have left the EU, that that formal deadline was passed, that this fight is not really over yet, that there is still a long way to go until we know exactly how we're leaving the EU.
Katie, I'm just curious to try, I'm trying to understand the dynamics. Boris Johnson, you know, campaigned on this, and this was a great victory for him, but he was not part of your celebration Friday night. It was just those of you who are, you know, the right-wing zealots who wanted to get out of the EU. Everybody else stayed home? Did it work out that way?
Yes, that's exactly right. So that's why this celebration was kind of, it was a celebration, but yet it was kind of marred. It wasn't a full victory because Boris Johnson, who's in number 10 Downing Street, only a few hundred metres down the road from where we were all gathered, Boris Johnson didn't come to the celebration, wasn't present at the celebration, and of course, therefore, the party wasn't a government-funded affair, and you could feel that. It lacked that sense of being a national event. Secondly, there are and remain endless divisions. You know how it works. In America, you've seen it well. Our side is very good at being divisive, at being its own worst enemy. We're very good at blue-on-blue attacks when we take down people on our team. And that's very much the story of Leave as well. Over 3 long years, you know, we've seen UKIP, the original party, then there was the Leave party, then Brexit party, and Boris Johnson is still very clear that he wants nothing at all to do with Nigel Farage, even though Farage really is the reason probably that Boris Johnson is in power and that we did actually get Brexit done.
Oh, how interesting. Yes, how interesting. How very British and American, all those divisions. I guess maybe how very people. I talked to Israel about how many parties they have. But anyway, Katie, still the fact remains that you guys have had a great victory. Honestly, you think about that. I mean, who would have thought you could ever finally bring it to this, that Boris Johnson could ever bring it across the line the way he has, so that no one can take that victory from you. I do wonder, why do you think the EU finally agreed to let you go?
Yeah, and I think you know, there's definitely a part there where you'd want to make it super clear that of all the people gathered there for the Brexit celebration, whether Boris Johnson was there, whether he wasn't, whether Farage was on the stage, whether he wasn't, you know, my reason for being there was all of the people gathered there, the stoicism, the resilience, the national pride of good British people who just want their sovereignty back and want to feel something like pride in their nation again. So that's where the celebration is, that's where the jubilation is, and that's where my heart is, of course. Now, in terms of the EU, what happened was that because our parliament wouldn't enact the will of the people, our parliament refused to deliver on the will of the people, Boris Johnson called that election on the 12th of December, and as a result, we cleansed parliament of all of those people who refused to deliver on the will of the people. We got rid of all those duplicitous politicians and replaced them with people who would follow Boris Johnson's agenda. And as a result, Boris was able to go to the EU and say, right, now we are talking on my terms. I have a big majority. We are leaving. If you don't let us leave or work with us, we're going anyway. So actually, actually it was Boris Johnson's gamble by going back to the people, having another general election, another, you know, another referendum, if you will, that gave him the big majority, which means Boris can now get things done. And that's why we do feel at last in the UK this sense of forward momentum. But I will say just briefly, the parallels between the UK and America are always so, so clear. You know, this idea that we voted Brexit, that was the wrong answer. You voted Trump, that was the wrong answer. We spent 3 years watching people try and destroy Brexit, and now we've watched them try and destroy Trump, impeachment being the latest. You know, it seems that we are doing the same thing, just at slightly different times.
That's very true, and I'm sure you know, Katie, and without getting into a tributary here, that the left does follow the same playbook everywhere. It was pretty boring, and you can trace it back, you know, decades into the old communist movements, and Stalin and Mao are the same. The tactics are the same. They're from the same playbook. And so I guess it shouldn't surprise us that the same kinds of things are playing out. The immediate effects of Brexit, I just want to know, in your opinion, I think of travel, I think of trade, treaties, immigration, what kinds of tangible differences are you going to see immediately?
Yes, so it's going to take a while for this next phase to play out. You know, we have a new deadline now of the 1st of December 2020. And by that point, so in 12 months' time, we should have agreed our trading framework with the EU. But the things that really matter, the top priorities, it's the thing that nobody wants to talk about, of course, for fear of being called racist, is immigration. I believe that what Brexiteers like myself want is ultimate control over who comes into our country. I'm sure we would love to see a points-based immigration system put in place. And, you know, what someone like myself would love to see is exactly what Trump is delivering in America, which is frankly saying, no, if you come from these countries, frankly, you're not welcome. But behind that, we will see also policies about laws. So we will be able to make our own laws, and our laws will supersede or be more important than any laws made by Europe. And what we'll also have there'll be a big contentious issue over fishing rights, because we are an island, and as it stands, Europeans, French, others, Icelandics, whatever, come and fish in our waters, and our fishermen would like to see their fishing rights returned to them. It's quite a big deal for us as an island surrounded by the sea. So those are the immediate things that will come into play in the next few weeks and months as we move forward into Brexit. But the one thing I think is important to say, and I think it's important for American listeners, having just come back from a month in California, is that the reason that Boris Johnson won the election on the 12th of December, the reason he was able to get this massive majority, was not because of conservative Tory supporters, Boris supporters. It was because people who had voted Labour all their lives, had voted Democrat all their lives, their fathers voted Democrats, their grandfathers voted Democrats, they saw that the risk of allowing Jeremy Corbyn, a Labour Democrat, the government into power was too great. The risk of socialism was too great. And even people who'd voted Labour all their lives came out and voted with Boris Johnson. And I wonder if that is going to be the parallel for America as well that takes us forward. Will people who have always voted Democrat or have never voted at all come out and support Trump because it's the right thing to do?
I think you're right, Katie. I think of, you know, Jeremy Corbyn actually gave you guys a face and policies in the flesh that maybe were a real wake-up call, that because they were so far on the left, and his policies, you know, would be the same as Bernie Sanders, you know, Elizabeth Warren, the left here. And so I think Americans, God willing, are waking up and saying, hey, wait a second, we really don't want to go there. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right about all those parallels, no question about that. You know, it's funny, I was in Scotland, as I told you before, my son is there. My husband and I drove up to a fishing village on the sea. Beautiful. I don't even know what it was, because we just drove and ended up there. And we spent the night in a bed and breakfast, and the people were fishermen. And, of course, fishermen not in little boats. They had these huge, beautiful boats. I don't even know how to describe them. Massive, like big, like yachts almost, yacht-like fishing boats.
Yes.
And they were talking about how difficult, because people were coming into British I don't exactly know the terms, but it's what appeared to be British waters,
yes,
and stealing the fish.
That's right.
And they were not, they were, yes, losing their business. Like they were feeling they were
that's
on
exactly
the end
right
of losing their whole life's work and trade that had been handed down from generation, yes, to generation.
That's exactly right. So our fishing fleet here in the UK is large trawlers. You're right. These are massive vessels, and usually they're a family thing. So the grandfather passes the trawler back down to the son, who then becomes the fisherman of the family. And what has been happening over the period that Europe has increasingly taken over, telling us what to do, controlling elements of us, our laws, our way of life, how curved our bananas have to be, true fact, is that Europeans have taken over the rights of our waters nearly right up into the shoreline. So very recently we had a situation where there were French trawler boats in our waters and there was an actual standoff at sea, French fishing boats smashing into the boats of British fishermen. And I mean, that like is like the new Armada or something, where we're actually having conflict at sea over our own fish being fished out of our own waters. And there is something in this that is much bigger, obviously, than fish. There is something about pride and territory and sovereignty and, you know, fighting for what is rightfully yours. And those are all big themes, I think, that we can all identify with. And I have to say, you know, watching what we had, we nearly had a Jeremy Corbyn socialist government. I have to say that I hope Bernie Sanders does win the ticket for, you know, the Democrats in America as we go to the Iowa caucuses. I hope he gets the ticket because, in a way, the more extreme the version that the Democrats have to vote for, the more likely that those who are centrists or at least able to spot trouble when they see it will know that they cannot give Democrats their vote if they want to preserve America.
Yeah. Katie, we just have a few minutes left, but the BBC is so far to the left. I've had my, through the years, been interviewed by them myself many times and followed it, and I don't know if people understand. They are the CNN of Great Britain, only they're the only outlet. There's really no other alternative. So are they going to be then now chipping away at Brexit and constantly criticizing it? How are they covering this?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things I'm always, Americans always do, give me their best shocked face when I tell them that our BBC, our state media, is the equivalent of CNN, if not more left. Secondly, I'm obliged to pay for it. So it would be like CNN being a tax on your income. You're obliged to pay for it. I am forced by law to pay for the BBC. If I do not, and I do actually have this letter sitting at home on my kitchen dresser, I'm told that the law will be enforced, people will come to my home, and people have been put in prison for not paying their contribution to what is effectively CNN. That happens in the UK. The second thing, in the UK we used to have Fox News. That was removed from our TVs. It was taken down because it was seen as being harmful or hate speech in the UK. So we had Fox News removed from our TVs. So I think the best example I can give you of how BBC are going to play the next little while, and which is why we know this fight is not over, is as I left the Brexit celebration and as I walked away, realising that in fact we're very much up against it still, I watched and in fact I filmed camera crews, BBC, Leftist, Guardian, others, swarming around. There were a couple of individuals who were a little bit worse for wear. They maybe had too much to drink. They were probably more incoherent than most. And, of course, who did the leftist media choose to swarm around to try to interview as examples of Brexiteers? You know, those individuals who were a bit worse for wear. And I think that's precisely what, you know, you've seen it in America with the Trump rallies and how they tried to pick apart Trump supporters.
Right.
That's what we're up against now, is this idea that Brexiteers are idiots and that eventually the sort of the moral good and great will prevail.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm. That's what I pray for, Katie, and I'm. That's what keeps us going. We believe that the truth will win in the end. Where that end's going to be, I'm not sure. But, Katie, how could people find you? What address? What? How can we lead them to your stuff?
Oh, bless your heart. Well, actually, that's a topical
quickly
point, and I appreciate we're running out of time. My Twitter has just been suspended. Because a Muslim lobbying group on behalf of our Muslim mayor had it taken down. So as it stands, I am truly silent.
Well, all right. Well, then that means you have to join me more often, and we'll get that word out. Katie, thank you so much. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Now an angel of the Lord said to Philip, "Rise and go toward the south to the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is a desert place." My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. At the height of a Holy Spirit outpouring in Samaria, where the gospel was being preached with great power and droves of people were converting to follow Christ, the Lord instructed Philip to leave Samaria and head south to Gaza. Philip didn't know a divine appointment awaited him. Through his ministry to the Ethiopian eunuch, the gospel would spread to Africa. He left the crowd to serve one. I call this step-down faith. It's easy to step up for the attention and applause of the masses, but do we have step-down faith?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute. No way.
There's a way. The Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
Hi, this is Pastor Robert Morris. I'm often asked, how do I grow in my relationship with the Lord? How do I hear God? What is God's plan and purpose for me? I want to personally invite you to join me on Sunday mornings right here on AFR for worship and the Word. And we will discover the answer to these questions together. We'll explore the truths found in God's Word that will help you strengthen your faith and develop a more intimate relationship with Him.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. No weapon that is fashioned against you shall succeed, and you shall refute every tongue that rises against you in judgment. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their vindication from me, declares the Lord. God promises that if we are unjustly condemned, He will, in His time, come to our aid and deliver us from these attacks against us. We are seeing this played out in real time as President Trump's legal team masterfully defends him from false and manufactured accusations. His opponent said he will be impeached for all of history. No, he will be acquitted for all of history. If you have been falsely accused, take heart. God sees, God knows, and He will vindicate you in the eyes of the only people that matter. This will be your heritage as a servant of the Lord.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. One of the nation's most perceptive pollsters has just conducted a national survey of likely voters to assess their knowledge of and concerns about China. John McLaughlin's findings are riveting and affirm a central reality about the upcoming election. The next commander-in-chief, irrespective of party or political philosophy, is going to find that contending with the Chinese Communist Party is job one in the national security, the economic, and probably the public health portfolios. What do candidates for the job know of the myriad threats posed by China, and what would they do about them? Fortunately, by a 77% margin, those polled want the presidential candidates to answer such questions. And majorities in every tested demographic would support a candidate who offered a more robust response to the China threat. This is Frank Gaffney. Check out the China poll at presentdangerchina.org.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. India Partners is a partner with us. And they are in the process of getting young girls, primarily some boys too, out of the red light district in India. They've had tremendous success, and kids as young as 8 are being trafficked and sold in the red light areas of Mumbai. We have talked about this a lot. We do it every year, and we help them to build these safe houses to get the kids out. And of course, the kids aren't just rescued. They're fed, they're educated, and they also hear about Jesus and the fact that forgiveness, new starts, fresh starts, And so it's a beautiful ministry, India Partners, and we would love to help them. $7.08 provides one day of safety, rescue, and care. And so that gives you kind of a springboard. You do the multiplier of seven, and you can figure out what it is that you think that you can afford to give. The phone number is 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396. So that's how you can make your donation this morning to India Partners. We just talked to Katie Hopkins in Great Britain about Brexit and about the propaganda that is the BBC. It is vitriolic. It is kind of amazing. And in some ways, she's right. It's more dark even than CNN. Nevertheless, this is a clip that took place on CNN just this past week that will give you an idea of what the American people are up against when they listen and choose their media information. Let's listen to clip 12.
Jill, what are the top media takeaways, about how this trial has been covered?
Yeah, I think one thing that I'm troubled by is discussing this as if it's kind of a both sides problem.
Huh.
You know, you have a right-wing media apparatus, you have a liberal media apparatus, and what you believe depends on where you get your news. I'm not sure that's right. I think we have a propaganda apparatus, and I think we have a media apparatus that is trying to tell the truth and tell the whole story. And what I think is particularly fascinating is how much that right-wing propaganda apparatus has become so deeply intertwined with Trumpism that it not only primed the audience for Trump to rise to power, but it's now repeating the kind of Trump-Roy Cohn playbook of lie, disseminate misinformation, you know, like the quote that you had up on the screen, you know, minimize, deny, and essentially project what you're doing onto someone else. And to see how tremendously that effective that has been, and to see not only right-wing media, but now also Republican senators and Republican politicians also jump on board, it's terrifying. And I don't know where we go from there to come up to, you know, to come to this kind of universal, national, agreed-upon truth.
Well, now, okay, so let's talk about that, because that sounds pretty convincing, doesn't it? I mean, couldn't it possibly be true that those of us that listen to Fox or get our news from Daily Caller or Mount Washington Examiner or numerous other Federalists are being propagandized? You know, we just don't really know the truth. We are being propagandized. And CNN and ABC and NBC and PBS and NPR and the others, they're telling the truth, right? Problem is, even just on its face, that's not possible. You cannot have one network being a propagandist when there are so many other voices. The other cable, MSNBC, NBC, CBS, ABC, they have so many more resources, so much more bandwidth, so many more listeners that it's not possible for one little lone voice to propagandize. Propaganda means, you know, you fill the airwaves to bend people's minds to your view so that they don't hear anything else and they just hear the same thing over and over again and they begin to repeat it because they don't know any better. Well, you'd have to be brain dead not to hear the other side. From the conservative perspective, from the perspective of people supporting President Trump, you'd have to be really stupid not to be hearing the arguments of the left. So we are not being propagandized on that basis, and it is fascinating to hear her accuse right-wing media of doing exactly what it is the left does. And that is exactly what they do. She says she is accusing right-wing media of projecting what you're doing on others. Well, that's, of course, a tactic of the communist left, the Saul Alinsky going back, you know, not Alinsky, he only goes back to maybe the 50s and 60s. But the communists before him projecting, blame others for what you're doing. That kind of gets them. It's projection. It's the psychologists call it. And it's a tactic that the left knows very well. I don't think conservatives are smart enough to pull that off, to be honest with you. We are not clever. I don't mean stupid. I'm not talking about IQ. I'm talking about cunning and manipulation. We don't seem to be able to pull that off. We just kind of speak the truth and tell it like it is. We don't plot and scheme, but they do. And so I just thought you would like to hear that. Now, the Iowa caucuses are taking place tonight, and it's really fascinating. I guess I probably should let Griff Jenkins tell you about it. No, I'm not going to, because we're running. There are other things I want to get in here. basically, the Iowa caucuses, they're the only – this the first in the nation time when Democrats and Republicans although the Republicans have a candidate, so I don't know if there's – I don't think there are any Republican caucuses. It's the Democratic caucuses taking place tonight with all of their candidates. And it basically works. You go to, like, your precinct, and you all go in this room, and you go into, like you take, like, an initial vote. Now, these are my words. I probably don't have the caucus terms. But you take an initial vote to just see where everybody is on different candidates. Pretty free form. And if any candidate fails to get 15%, then they're off. They're out. And so their supporters then, let's say the Bernie Sanders supporters go to one corner and the Pete Buttigieg go to another corner and the Amy Klobuchar go to another corner and you fill in the blanks. So all these corners and places, the supporters gather. But if any candidate does not get 15%, then if you are in Amy Klobuchar's and you didn't get 15%, then you have to choose another candidate. So then you go over to that other corner, and then a count is taken. And that's the way it goes until they finally reach a consensus and you have the last man standing. Now, here's the interesting thing about it. The caucuses are kind of a wild card, as you can imagine. They're not very exact. Nobody can really predict how people are doing, but they are reporting that Bernie Sanders is doing very well and gaining. Joe Biden is still doing very respectably. He's right there, I think, under Biden in terms of the polls. Pete Buttigieg is not doing so well. Amy Klobuchar, they're telling us, is coming up, but I think her polling is pretty minimal. We really don't know. Bloomberg is going to be able to be part of it now. They've changed their rules so that even though he didn't debate, somehow he's admitted. So he's kind of taking up, I think, some of Joe Biden's voters. So that's the way the caucuses work, and we'll be talking about it tomorrow. But here's an interesting story. Remember that the Sanders organizer in Iowa was the first of James O'Keefe's videos that talked about gulags and Trump supporters needing to be re-educated, and that's what Bernie has in mind when he says education for all. It should be, the right wing. They should be re-educated, and those rich people should go work in mines and, bend them to our way of thinking, and they should be punished. And cities will burn if Bernie's not elected. So that's the guy in Iowa. So keeping that in mind, there are reports now that the Sanders campaign plans to kind of color outside of the lines in tonight's caucuses. And the way they plan to do it, according to reports, and this is in Politico, which is, you know, not a right-wing piece of information, by the way, they think that Bernie Sanders is planning on announcing using and through social media the results of the first round of votes, which is not done because that's just the very beginning of what happens in the caucuses. And the person who comes out on the top in the first round often is not the person that wins. But they think that Bernie's going to mess with the rules and that his people are going to mess with the rules and kind of try to manipulate people's votes in the caucuses tonight. So, and there's a lot of rivalry or hatred, I guess you could say, between these camps. You know, Hillary Clinton won in Iowa at 49.8% to Bernie Sanders, 49.6%. And the case has been made that Hillary Clinton actually stole the election, the nomination from Bernie Sanders last time around with all her superdelegates. So there is bad blood between the mainstream Republicans and Bernie Sanders, the likely communist. So Sanders made it a pitch last night. He says, so tomorrow night is the beginning. It's the beginning of the end for Donald Trump. At the beginning of the moment when we tell the billionaire class in the 1%, this country belongs to all of us, not just a few. Reminds me very much of the promises that the Khmer Rouge made to the Cambodian people when they marched down the streets of Phnom Penh and then ended up taking over the country and turning on and eventually murdering the people that did not agree with the regime and producing the killing fields. Now, I'm not saying Bernie Sanders is going to be, you know, it's his followers in South Carolina and in Iowa seem to be pretty clear that they wouldn't mind, you know, killing some people who don't get on the same page as Bernie Sanders supporters. They've been public about that. You can look up James O'Keefe's undercover interviews with them, and they are the field organizers for Bernie Sanders in Iowa and South Carolina, respectively. So this is a pretty serious situation, actually. Now, I want to move to Joe Biden. because Joe is, of course, doing well, you know, still in the polls. But some information came out yesterday thanks to, I can't find his name right offhand, but I'll tell you in a second. But I want you to hear the clip. This is Joe Biden and a whole expose through media several years ago about Joe Biden's lies. This is going to amaze you. So let's listen first to clip 8.
Democratic presidential candidate Joseph Biden today faces a controversy. 3 weeks ago at a debate at the Iowa State Fair, he used phrases identical to those delivered by British Labour Party leader Neil Kinnock.
Biden seemed to be claiming Kinnock's vision and life as his own.
Why is it that my wife is sitting out there in the audience, is the first in her family to ever go to college?
Why is Gladys the first woman in her family in 1,000 generations to be able to get the university?
My ancestors who worked in the coal mines in northeast Pennsylvania and come up after 12 hours and play football.
8 hours underground and then come up and play football.
It's because they didn't have a platform upon which to stand.
There was no platform upon which they could stand.
The notion that every thought or notion or idea you'd have to go back and find and attribute to someone, I think is, quite frankly, ludicrous.
The problem here is that Senator Biden told his audience he'd just been thinking about these things, and he failed to give any credit at all to his famous British speechwriter.
You know, I was thinking on the way over here. Now, that's a little too much, because, as you point out, what's behind the words? What's there? And a lot of people, a rap on Biden has always been that it's just a surface.
I should have said, to paraphrase Neil Kinnock, it's the only time I didn't, in all the times I've ever used it.
But CBS News found a tape of a second instance.
It reappeared in the New York Times with a new charge, that Biden had appropriated a famous litany from the late Robert Kennedy about what the gross national product cannot measure.
It cannot measure the health of our children.
The health of our children.
The quality of our education.
The quality of their education.
The joy of their play.
Or the joy of their play.
Biden gave Kennedy no credit. He has also quoted or paraphrased John Kennedy, Hubert Humphrey, and British Labour Party leader Neil Kinnock, all without credit.
Yeah, it goes on. There's so much more to it. In fact, oh, I don't think I can play it all. This is courtesy of Sean King. I don't know Sean's bio, but he's the one who blogged about this. And we'll put this clip on Joe Biden on our Facebook page, because it goes on to talk about he brags just 3 weeks ago. He talked about how he marched in the protests during the 60s, you know, how he the anti-war protests. But then they dug up this video of him in 1987 saying, you know, he never did. He said, I didn't do that. I didn't like the dress the way they did. I never went out in the streets with them. And then in this original clip with this is in 1987. So you've got Sam Donaldson, Cokie Roberts. You've got other people who are mainstream journalists who can't get over how he imitated not only, again, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, this British a politician, and they would kept juxtaposing the things that Biden was saying with these guys. You know, this is in the days before cell phone cameras. This is before tweeters, before people could follow campaigns and report what candidates were saying. So you could say anything to anybody. You go down to a little town in Missouri or Tennessee, and you say one thing, and you go to a place in Pennsylvania and say something different. Those days are gone. But this was Joe Biden. This was Joe Biden, and I maintain is Joe Biden. And by the way, if you saw the movie Created Equal, the Justice Thomas movie over the weekend, which, by the way, was phenomenal, maybe we'll open the phone lines tomorrow and ask you what you thought. It's still playing this week in many, many places. I hope you'll go and see it. But you'll see Joe Biden there interrogating Justice Thomas in the most arrogant way. It is shocking. So he's in the Iowa polls today, the Iowa caucuses, and he is way up at the top. So we'll see what happens. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.